It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 198 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I talk with Tyler Chin Tanner, a writer of many good things including Adrenaline, American Terrorist, a couple of anthologies including Loved and Lost, and a Broken Frontier one. He does a lot of short stories, and you'll hear me struggle not to give out spoilers because his writing is so tight that I can't really pull out different parts without giving away important parts of the stories he's written. Oftentimes I just have to give impressions, but his writing is excellent. And if you want to learn more about him, go to his A Wave Blue World website. He writes all kinds of stories dealing with real life and gives us things to think about, which I always appreciate, as well as a variety in his writing style. Just a teaser, he talks about reality television as well as society as we know it as far as politics goes, among other things, including relationships. So you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I'm talking today with Tyler Chin Tanner, creator of several good, interesting books that I really enjoyed. One of them is called Adrenaline, and there's another one called American Traitor. And he's got two anthology books, looks like, a Broken Frontier anthology and Loved and Lost. How are you doing today, Tyler?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good. Well, it's good to talk with you. I got to meet you back at HeroesCon back earlier in the year, and I got to sample your stuff. And I really got a chance to read Adrenaline while I was up there at HeroesCon, and I really liked it. You deal with a subject that's one of my favorites to lampoon, and that's reality shows. And I love that. So why don't you let people know exactly what this is about, like kind of a brief description.
Well, Adrenaline, the title anyway, comes from a spoof on a reality TV show. It also deals with responsible tourism. The gist is that a billionaire playboy wants to have his own reality adventure show because he's not very good at anything other than going on these wild, extravagant safaris, mountain climbing. And the protagonist that he meets is actually Dr. Saida Henry, an African doctor who, of course, needs more funding for her medical programs and is sort of hitting a wall there. So he lures her into forming these different teams, mostly disgruntled athletes of some sort, a triathlete, a boxer, a stunt driver. Yeah, and they just have this wild, free-forming, you know, they just carry camcorders with them and challenge themselves in this long race of snowboarding, mountain climbing, scuba diving, everything. I just thought it was a great chance to do something like wild and fun, you know, with also having some cultural critique to it.
I got a kick because he wants to do something that's somewhat fake as things go. And she's the one that's really living the life, and she can actually do these things in reality, while he is somebody who is trying to do these things in a setting that's not necessarily real, which I
really enjoy. Well, his life is in front of the TV or in front of the camera. That's the only life he knows.
Right. So I was really curious about it because I always have trouble with reality television. I always put quote marks around it. Because, you know, you have to wonder sometimes when you watch these things, how many of these things are actually being planned as they're doing the show?
Yeah, because, I mean, you got to figure. I mean, they have to set up the cameras. I mean, everything you're seeing when supposedly something happens randomly, like how do they know to put the cameras right there?
Yeah.
You know, everything's a little too scripted.
And I was watching this Ice Drivers or something it was, and they happened to have cameras in exactly the right place in order to get all the action that was going on.
Right.
And everybody's going, oh, that's real. Look how real that is. Well, no, it can't be real because they had the cameras in the right place.
Yeah.
You know, you can't set that up all the time. So I like that real well. And what's fun is you go through various different stages, and in some ways I thought you were alluding to certain reality shows that are or have been on.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just got the gist of it, you know. I wasn't necessarily pointing at one, but like, you know, Amazing Race obviously has close ties. But yeah, and then I tried to do a little bit like of the personal, like asides when they talk to the camera and things like that. Yeah, but I tried to generalize it.
Now, have you had experience working on one of these kinds of shows, or just you're looking at it as a viewer?
I didn't have much experience with the reality TV shows. No, I did a lot of those adventures. I was in Africa.
Oh.
most of those sports I've at least tried, you know, once. So it's kind of basing it off of my own travel and adventure experience.
Very cool. Because, you know, that's kind of something that a lot of people would like to do, but not many of us have. So you can actually approach it from a realistic perspective. I like that.
Yeah.
That's probably why it has the feel that it does. It has a very strong feel of we understand what's going on. And there are certain times when the script kind of moves a different direction or things happen in a different way. And there's a lot of several twists that I really liked as well as the story progresses. So I thought that was really well written and well done. Is this your first comic or have you done other ones before this one?
Yeah, Adrenaline was my first one. I actually started that. I was still at the Qbert School. And so I was like showing it to my teachers, and Joe Qbert even had some comments for me, critiques. And that came out straight out of, I jumped right into it. I really wanted to hit the ground running coming out of art school. So.
Great. Now, when did you graduate from Qbert School?
2006.
2006. Okay, so this story has been in process for a while, so that's really
good. Yeah, book, the trade paperback, came out in 2009, so that's when I completed the series.
Okay, so it first came out as individual issues, is that what happened?
Yeah. It was 8 issues. First 4 issues are distributed through Diamond and in comic shops and everything when they canceled me, but it kind of timed pretty well with the birth of digital comics because I got on Comixology and just did like a print-on-demand for the last 4 issues. Then I was able just to finish it and put out a collection.
Great. Yeah. So did you form your own company? Is that what happened?
Yeah, Wave Blue World, yeah.
Yeah, like that.
My own imprint company. I don't know what to call it. You know, I'm not trying to be like a full-scale publisher or whatever. I just want to have the ability to put my own work out. And I've worked with some other people as well.
Well, it has a lot of good character to it, and I like the people, the way that you've made them, that the evil people, quote-unquote, aren't necessarily completely bad. There are some good parts to them as well, and the good people aren't necessarily perfect, which I really liked. And there's a lot of great writing in this, as well as the artwork. Now, you went to Qbert School to learn artwork, is that what it was for?
Yeah, it's a cartoonist school for sure. I mean, art is its main focus. I was there mostly to learn the craft. Altogether, I'm primarily a writer, but I did really want to get into writing comics. I mean, that's always been my passion. So, yeah, I thought it did me good as far as just learning how it's done.
Because really, the script has a good, strong feel to it, like you're an experienced writer there. So I was kind of like, to hear that this is the first one you did, and this is your kind of your first writing thing, wow, I'm kind of surprised because, wow, it does hold together very nicely.
Oh, thank you. That's great to hear, yeah.
Now, the question, of course, is it does wrap up really nicely. And again, this is something that I regret in comics a lot of times today, is there's no resolution to anything. Everything just keeps, we keep stumbling along from month to month until we finally get to the place where either the comic gets canceled or people don't have the money to buy it anymore and they move on. But you actually bring it to a conclusion, which I love that.
Yeah.
That was wonderful. And it's a really fun conclusion, too. It's serious on some levels, but you're saying something to us, which I really appreciated as well. And I really liked it. I thought it was great. And, of course, it's Adrenaline's the name of the show, as you were mentioning. And they do all different kinds of physical things with different teams. And I don't know. I guess I saw some similarities. Maybe it was just I've been exposed to more reality shows than I'd like. And I saw some things about how they were doing. And I like the fact that he was trying to manipulate things on the girl. Which he wasn't always able to do because she was actually better at real life than he was. So I like that. And, of course, there's a twist about a certain point in, and I don't want to spoil too much, but let's just say that they need more players involved. Yeah. And they do something a little different, which I liked. And I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say that they bring in somebody that a group of people that I was actually surprised to see. So that was pretty good. That was a nice bit of writing there, too. I like that.
Oh, yeah. That comes from my experience, some of my experience, too. Again, I don't know how much you want to spoil it for people, but my experience in Africa and working with the Maasai people, you know, was something that I had some exposure to and was familiar with. But, of course, I'm not going to write, like, a definitive work of these people, and I don't have that experience. So just to be able to use something that was just culturally appropriate but still just mix it in with a fun story is just sort of an element. It was really fun to do.
I also like the fact that the culture that they were dealing with and where she's living and where she's acting as a physician is it's a real culture. You know, there was a cartoon used to be called The Thornberries, and it was about a British girl who went to Africa, and suddenly she becomes the person who is most in touch with nature.
Right.
The people who lived there for decades had absolutely no concept of what was going on, but since she came from the UK, she understood nature. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
How can that be? See, what you've done is I like the more realistic portrayal of the country where she's working or and the things that she's doing. She's having to put up with a lot of terrible things going on in her country. And, of course, that doesn't make her any more open to like this guy who comes out of nowhere and basically wants to and drafts her, blackmails her into getting more money.
Yeah, right.
I thought that was really nicely done because, like I said, I've seen so many unrealistic circumstances in which you're sort of pandering to the audience and what you're saying. Somebody's saying, well, this would happen this way. Us white folk, we're better at things than other people.
Right, the concept of the white savior going in and saving the town and knowing everything that they don't know, right?
See, you didn't do that, which I was very – well, when I saw that, I was like, yes. Oh, yes, finally a story that actually makes a lot of sense and gets things across to people and lets people know we can't just barge into other people's cultures and somehow take over.
Right.
I really love the way you did that, so I thought that was great. Was that your perception of what was happening, that sometimes we go over just – we may not know any better. We go over into a culture and try to kind of force our will on them?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that happens. It's both a common trope in art, literature, and movies, and it also happens in real life, right, where we think we're going to go over there and save them and do things our way, and we don't really know. You know, from things even as simple as growing crops, you know, mm-hmm. the ground is different there, mm-hmm. the way that they grow and need to be watered and planted. And, you know, we just don't have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was there, and I was only there briefly, you know, I was mm-hmm. teaching for a little bit, mm-hmm. what I saw, I mean, what really gave me the big impression that I got from it was that people who were doing the most good were actually the locals, you know, were all actually from the area. They knew about it, and they had been able to pull themselves up to a certain extent and were doing the same for their people. And so that's why I was like, yeah, I want to make someone like this the hero.
I really liked her. Was she modeled after somebody you met over there, or?
It's a conglomeration of a few people I met, nobody specific.
Mm-hmm.
I probably idealized her a little bit, made her a little more heroic,
mm-hmm.
the way she's jumping on the helicopters and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just to fit with a comic.
But on the other hand, there are people in other cultures who might take to our culture eventually and mm-hmm. do these kinds of things the way that you have her doing them. So I really liked that. I like the fact that you're showing that there's not one superior culture that we have to kind of go and show people. But yeah, on the other hand, she can actually come along and do real well in our kinds of things. When, even in a place where she's not familiar, she at one point gets separated from this guy, and she's in New York City, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And she actually is able to function there pretty well. And, of course, he manages, of course, you know, for the story to progress. She's got to get back. But
right.
I really liked the fact that she did real well over here, where when he's over there in their culture, it's not quite the same. You know, unless he can get his way, it's not going to go well for him.
Right.
So I like that quite a lot. Now, you drew the art, too. And I really liked it, too, because it had sort of a more realistic style. Sometimes in these kinds of stories, especially dealing with this kind of subject matter, it's a little far out the way that the art goes.
Yeah, I did the breakdown art. James Boyle was the primary artist, and he finished up with colors and everything.
Oh, did he? Okay, great.
Yeah, but I sent him sort of like how I wanted it to look, the mm-hmm. sketching and just some of the blocking and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So how long did it take from you from concept all the way through to final trade to be able to get the story told?
The concept started real early because I started the idea when I was in my second year at school.
Mm-hmm.
So it was 2 years of just sort of developing it and showing it to teachers. But we really hit the ground running in 2006. And so that was the end of 2006. So really, like, I don't know, 2.5 years to finish that up.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That was a good time. That does really well. And, of course, I have to ask, the Screams television show to me. Have you ever thought about giving this over to somebody and seeing if they want to turn this into, instead of a reality show, a television show?
I mean, I've certainly thought about it. I don't know. I mean, that's such a difficult world. Mm-hmm. I've had so many agents give me their cards and mm-hmm. I'm not really sure what to do with them. And
mm-hmm.
some of them have picked up books and been like, yeah, we'll look into this or we'll discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, I don't know. I would probably need somebody really, like an agent on my side, really pushing for that. And I don't know, I just haven't been concerned myself with it too much. Mm-hmm. You know, much like I liked having that book end with a conclusion, mm-hmm. I kind of like to just move on myself. Like, I wrote that story. Mm-hmm. Now I've got other stories.
You know, okay. So. Okay.
Because that turned out real nicely. On some levels, you ended it so well that I can't see any more with these characters, that because it all pulled together so well. And again, I would love to see more comics do that. But I bet you there's other stories with these characters you could come up with.
I think if there's kind of open for like a reunion type mm-hmm. series, it wouldn't be just a continuation on continuation. But yeah, sure. 10 years from now, maybe I'll try, you know, have the characters meet up again or something. Mm-hmm. Just to do something else fun. It'd
be funny if their roles got reversed.
Yeah.
That would be really interesting to see.
Who knows what happened? They could be all sorts of different things now.
Yeah, it was good. Well, it's called Adrenaline, and it's a terrific book. I really enjoyed it when I read it, and I wanted to make sure I got the chance to talk with you about it and promote it. If people want to get a hold of Adrenaline, what's the way to do it now?
Well, the most direct way is just through my website, A Wave Blue World. Mm-hmm. And I have it for sale there. Very easy checkout process, PayPal or credit card. It's on Comixology digitally, if you like to read digitally. I actually have the PDFs you can download from my website, too.
Oh, cool.
And then, you know, it's on Amazon and stuff. It's hard to find in stores because, you know, it's like one of those things. Store might have ordered it once, but mm-hmm. they wouldn't have reordered it if someone bought, like, the one copy or whatever.
I hate to say it, but there are a lot of books, including yours, that I wish were available in stores, you know, that they're great reads, but because it's not from one of the big two or the big five or however many you want, people kind of just, oh, well, that's not a book that we would want to read because it doesn't have such and such a person in it, or it doesn't tell such and such a story. But I have learned over the years to look for good stories, and when I hit yours at HeroesCon, I was real pleased with it, and I really wish that people would give this one a shot. You know, if you've got a chance to order it, you know, please do, and give it a read, because you'll learn some things about different cultures, and you'll learn things about different people, which I wish more comics did that. I hate to keep saying that, but it's the truth. Yeah.
That was great. I'm glad I had that impression on you. Really,
good. Now,
seems that you liked everything I was going for.
Well, it really sang to me. I always like when a book really works for me. I like to say it sang to me, and that was what your book did. When I got to the end of it, you know, you get to the end, you go, oh, that's it. Oh, nuts. kind of stuff. But, of course, it ended so well that I wasn't disappointed. I just thought it was, you know, one of those great books and one of those great stories that is perfect for today. We've got so many reality shows going on that we need to be able to look at reality instead of the reality show. Mm-hmm. And I thought when you brought those two worlds together, you did a good job of telling us what the real world is like when compared to that. So Adrenaline is a terrific book, and I really recommend it. If you haven't read it out there, be sure to get to his website and download it, or buy it, buy a paper copy if you like. Which reminds me, you were at HeroesCon. Do you go to other cons as well to sell the book?
Yeah, I go to a few a year. I don't do a huge tour of conventions, but HeroesCon I always wanted to try. Mm-hmm. I'm in Portland, Oregon now.
Oh.
So I do Emerald City, mm-hmm. a couple shows around here. Mm-hmm. Still trying to figure out, because there's been so many shows popping up.
Yeah.
It's hard to do them all, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I should try to do one mm-hmm. in, I think there's one in Denver now. You mm-hmm. see some, like, Toronto, mm-hmm. some good shows there. New York has some. Mm-hmm. There's SBX.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I kind of just look at my schedule and which ones make the most sense mm-hmm. and try mm-hmm. different ones.
Well, it's definitely worth the search for it. And, of course, if you've got a website set up so people can get to it. So it's a great book. I really, really like it. Now, as great as this book is, do you got other works that are out there that we can access? And I had a chance to read, and this one's available on Comixology, The American Terrorist. I like the book, that one, real well, too. Talk about very different subject matter. This has gone the other direction. Do you want to describe a little bit of what American Terrorist is about?
American Terrorist is a look at politics in the U.S., the broken system, and what average citizens can do to break out of that system and try to enact, you know, real change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, boy, that couldn't be more timely. And right now, we're going through a primary process for the election of a president, and it is a disaster. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, it's a year and a month and a half until we actually have the election. And every poll that comes out, people are basically saying well, this person's going to win. Person said, because you know, this will change so rapidly that it's very unlikely that the same person's going to be in charge or at the head of the pack as right now.
Right.
So I really think that the story is really a good one about that. That you've got a lot of different characters and a lot of different things going on in that. And I like the artwork too. Did you do the breakdowns on that one as well?
No, that one I just purely sent the script off to Andy McDonald, who did a great job with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Matt Wilson and Michael Wickham colored it. Yeah, it turned out great.
Now, when did that publish? Is it just recent, or is this one that's been out for a while?
Yeah, I started serializing it online. I never made print issues of it in 2009, just after Adrenaline came out, then put that book out at the end of 2012. Yeah, it was written to be a graphic novel, so I didn't mind not doing the issues. There's four major chapters in it, but they're not their own issues.
Right, yeah. Right. It's all in there. And what's funny is the pages in between the chapters are black and white, but the pages where the story's going on is color. And I kind of like that because it set the tone. At first I thought, is this going to be a black and white book? Because sometimes black and white books are tough to sell to folks. But I really like the artwork and the color. And I like the pacing and the variety of characters. I thought those were all excellent. And again, I don't know what your opinion is of of course, if you're writing this book, you probably do think that the system needs an overhaul of some sort. So as you were talking in there about that, and we see people all over the spectrum involved.
Yeah.
So I really like that. So did that concept come, had you gotten that at the same time you were working on Adrenaline, or was that something that came to you after that?
Let me think. I think that idea started kicking around in my head while I was still finishing up Adrenaline. But I know I started working on it right away, even while I was probably still finishing up the production and printing of Adrenaline, when I started writing it and coming up with some ideas for it. Yeah, I mean, to me, there's a similarity there. I mean, there's a different tone to it for sure, but I mean, they both are very much societal, cultural critiques, you know, a little bit of look at what we're doing, where we're at as people, but also try to keep the action going, have some light moments, some humor, to make it a real story, and they're mostly character-driven.
Well, that's a great thing, too, is we come to like the characters real well, and we get to know them. And so the things that they do make sense to us. And again, you've got people with varying points of view interacting. And I really like the way that the whole story. And again, I don't want to spoil stuff because there are a lot of things that take place that if we start talking about the ending or something, are going to blow the whole book. And that's the last thing I want. I want people to be able to sit down and read it and give it a good go, because right now is the perfect time to read this book. It just is. And I love the way that the characters all interacted and the way that the story ends. Again, you come to what I consider to be a pretty good conclusion.
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, I'm really just trying to end these. You know, it's 200 pages. I mean, that's enough for me. I don't know. I mean, some people grow accustomed to these long serialized stories, but I kind of feel like come up with a plot, conflict, get to your resolution.
Well, yeah, that's I regret that there aren't more doing that, but I'm sounding like a broken record here with all that, because
you know, the economics of comics is that, like, you tend to put something out and it's either a flop or a success, and if it's a flop, then you need to end it, like, right away. And if it's a success, then you want to keep milking that, you know, if you've got a hit. And that's why people end up doing that, which is why I kind of like to be outside of that system a little bit and doing it myself, because I can just make the comics that I want to read rather than what the marketing charts say.
It's interesting because a lot of the people who I think do the best writing use that philosophy. What would I like to read? Because, like, Mark Guggenheim, who does Arrow, they will do a TV show like they'd want to see. He said that one time, and so you're in the right place when it comes to these kinds of things, because that's the way to make good books, especially people who understand comics. So a lot of people make comics because they have a screenplay that didn't go over, and then they put it into a comics format, which is great, but the thing we have to do is you have to understand the comics reader. And that's the thing I think you handle real well. You get all the comics readers, get their perspective, and are talking to us as opposed to something that has nothing to do with what a comics reader might understand. So I like that.
Right. Yeah, I do try. I try to write to comics for another medium. Yeah.
Right. That's a good thing. So that one's a great book. Again, now that's available on Comixology. You also have that available on your website?
Yep, it's on Way Blue World. It's on Amazon. It's on Comixology. I feel like that's the best I can do. You know?
Yeah,
keep going to all the different stores and check if they still have a copy or not. But I put it on those places. Yeah. Anybody willing to just type in a Google search will probably find it.
Yeah. Well, it's really good. And again, it's a very different subject from Adrenaline, but American Terrorist has some things to say that I think people should be reading right now, particularly. So, very good stuff. Now, you've got two other projects that I'm aware of. You've got the one I really liked, and I was reading it. There's one called Loved and Lost. And you made a lot of the content available to me so I could read them. And there's some really fascinating stuff. The very first story in the collection you sent to me was about two people who had met online.
Yeah, status update, yeah.
Yeah, and what they do is they actually try to have a real-life conversation. But they discover just because they've said stuff to each other online doesn't mean it feels like they're making assumptions about each other.
Right. I think you present yourself a certain way online.
Mm-hmm.
You choose what to post. You choose what discussions to have.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's not what your everyday life looks like.
Mm-mm.
So, Loved and Lost, it's 9 stories. I wrote them all myself, and I'm working with a different artist on each one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all about sort of flawed love. It doesn't mean that they don't necessarily work out or stick together. I mean, there's no great conclusion of whether this is a perfect love or not, but the flaws are all very clear, and they have to do with, you know, our society and our culture and
mm-hmm.
how we set ourselves up for failure or mm-hmm. are not open
mm-hmm.
in the way we should be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's 9 different stories, and yeah, I sent you what I had of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of them are fully lettered and you were able to read them.
Mm-hmm. The first one, of course, I really loved. I don't want to spoil the end, but you portray it in a beautiful way that that illustrates exactly where they are to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they I can't spoil it. I just get to read it. So it's really good, but there's a difference between what we think is going to happen when we meet online and what actually happens in reality.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that one. And the other one that really jumped out at me was the last one.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
The last one just got me. It was kind of an exclamation point.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was.
Of what was going on. And it's a couple, and they're going on a picnic.
Yeah.
And the guy tells the woman something that is something of a surprise, but the surprise to us anyway, but she doesn't seem to worry about these things very much. And there's, it's so well written, you can't really pull a part out and talk about it without the whole deck of cards coming down on it. There's they're at a certain place, and there's certain things going on around them, and the things that go on around them have an influence on what the story's going to end up like. So I really love that. It ends up in such a way that it goes back to where it started. And sometimes that's the best way to do a story is mm-hmm. to return to the beginning. And God, it was such a good story. When it got to the end, I was literally going like, oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. See, a lot of relationships end up like this. Boy, that was really, really
great.
Nicely done.
Well, that's lovely to hear. That's like exactly what I was going for. And glad I hit the right note.
Yeah. And there are other ones in there, too. Again, there's been this a variety. It's really important to me. And you're telling very different stories with very different characters
mm-hmm.
as we go on, very different situations. And for me, I was really impressed by the variety that you brought to it. You know, because I always like to say to people that variety is what I'm looking for.
Right.
Different kinds of storytelling. And every story doesn't have the same theme to it.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, and of course, you know, love and lost loves are something that we all deal with. So you're singing to us in this way, too, that we get to see various kinds of things with various kinds of different storytelling going on. And just wonderful stuff. I really like it. Now, it's in a stage now. It's getting close to being produced now.
Yes. Yeah, I'm waiting on, I don't know if you could tell, there's 2 stories that are not complete.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a lot still needs to be lettered, which is why you couldn't really read mm-hmm. much more than those 2 that we talked about. But I'm just waiting for those artists to finish up. Artists have different commitments and mm-hmm. things come up, and I just try to be flexible. And they're going to try to finish by December, and then I hope to have it out for the shows next year, you know, early next year.
So how's it going to be available? You're going to sell it, you were just saying at the show. What about, are they going to be on Comixology?
Yeah, they'll definitely be on Comixology. I'll definitely take them to shows with me. They'll be available on my website, on Amazon. Same thing I do. It works well for me. I know I don't do the numbers that other bigger companies do, but, you know, as long as I can get it to the audience and keep building word of mouth,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's fine for me.
Very good, because again, I was really taken. Even if I couldn't read the dialogue sometimes, I could tell what the subject matter was about, and that interested me. So, I think that you have an ability to look at reality and communicate real stories instead of doing things in, that necessarily aren't comic. What's the best way to say that? It's comic tropes have certain way of doing it. Batman can never have a real girlfriend, which always leaves people to question him. And all these other things go on. But what you're doing is you're looking at a variety of real storytellings. And as such, that to me is real satisfying because I want to see something that I can't figure out what's going to happen.
Right.
And your stories are that way. I always get to the end and go, oh, I didn't see that coming. And boy, do I need that in my reading. That's really great. So this book will be out in early next year, as you're saying?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so
as early in 2016 as I can get it out.
Okay, and there's one other thing that you've got going on that I really enjoyed reading, and of course the parts of it. You've got this Broken Frontier anthology.
Yeah, so this is a pretty big project outside of me, my little world, but I've been tasked with putting it together. One of my side jobs is I write for Broken Frontier, which is a news website. Mm-hmm. And the editor there, Frederick Houghton, approached me about doing an anthology. You know, he really wanted to just get the people from all over the industry to do stories about breaking into new frontiers, you know, breaking borders. And I was like, well, okay, you know, anthologies are hard to do. I'm doing one now because I had already started Loved and Lost. And he's like, well, these are the people that I want to ask. And I'm just like, if you can get half of those, you know, I'll do it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he did. I mean, they signed up. The list is on my site. Mm-hmm. But a lot of, like, really well-established talent. I mean, people who wrote Hulk and I don't even know the mainstream titles. I haven't read them in a while, but these guys are well known in the industry. Indie creators, people just with different styles and different approaches, all willing to do this anthology that we ran a Kickstarter for. And we had a big goal and, you know, we raised $60,000 and people are doing their stories now and we're collecting them and putting them together, including two stories that I wrote. Mm-hmm. I snuck two of my own stories in there.
Great.
And yeah, it's really unbelievable, an unbelievable experience. Extremely satisfying. It's a lot of work, a lot to keep tabs on. 40 different creators, 27 stories, but everybody has been really easy to work with and turning in their best work, fantastic work, and it looks great.
Well, I recognize Fred Van Lente, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He writes one of the stories called The Beard, which I liked.
Yeah. About yeah, that's one of the best, yeah. I mean, they're all so good. I can't really. Every time I'm like, that's one of the best, then I look at five more and I'm like, but those are the best too.
It's hard to pick out from your children which one you like the best. So, but that's a really good story. It's about a bearded lady, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
And stuff that goes on with her is really interesting, and it ends well. Shall we say, again, the endings of these stories are just like when you write them. They are very good conclusions that we get to a place where we go, okay, now we get what's happening full blow. And I really like that.
Yeah, it's the thing about writing short stories. I mean, some of these people are writing 6-page. I think 12-page might be the longest that we have. Mm-hmm. And within that frame, they're really getting you into this world and not necessarily developing this long arc of a story, but they give you the information and they hit some sort of note at the end. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of conclusion or some sort of question or something that you're not like, oh, I just read the first 6 pages of something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be a bigger world, but they gave you that ending. They gave you that satisfaction at the end.
Yeah. And then, of course, Marguerite Bennett, she's a well-known writer these days. So mm-hmm. she's got a good story in there.
Yep.
But the one that really got to me was called Flyer.
Oh, great. Yeah.
That one was really good. The artwork by Mike Lawrence is very, what's the word to say? Boy, it really jumps off the page at me. And it's about a young girl who, well, let's just say who flies.
Right.
We'll leave it at that. And there's a lot going on that she gets involved with. And I just really enjoyed the story and enjoyed the art. It was just, the story's written by Justin Zimmerman.
Zimmerman, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really something else. I really liked it a lot, I have to say. You know, again, when you have a short story, you can't really reveal all the stuff. But she's talking to, I don't even know if that's can say that, but at the beginning she's talking to an older adult before she goes off on her mission. And the artwork really accentuates the story real well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a steampunk setup,
which
I really liked. And when it gets to the end, it concludes in a way that I kind of liked. And that she's got to do something that she doesn't necessarily want to do. But as always, it's a coming of age kind of thing when she's involved.
Right.
Yeah. So excellent, excellent stuff.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Yeah, I really like that story.
So this is coming together too. Do you have an estimated date as to when this is going to be available?
Well, we've got to deliver it to our Kickstarter backers first.
Right.
I'm hoping that we can make it available digitally mid to late October, you know, this upcoming month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we passed the deadline already, so we're just waiting on a couple of guys. And again, you know, I understand life deadlines. I mean, these guys are doing, like, work for DC and Vertigo and stuff like that. So as soon as we can get it all, like, wrapped up, we'll send it to the printer, obviously, but I also send it right to Comixology. And as soon as they can put it online, then I'll be able to deliver that to the backers and then open that up digitally for other people just to start checking it out, because I want people to read it and start viewing it right away. Mm-hmm. And then I hope to deliver the physical book right after the holidays, you know, early January.
Okay.
And then I just have to see, I mean, we had 1,300 backers, so we spent a lot of time at the post office.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So I'll see, but I don't want to make it available until the last backer has their book.
Of course.
But that would be like probably by February.
Oh, that'd be great.
I mean, I'd rather go to the post office every day for a month and stretch it over 2 months. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. I'm helping somebody out. They got a Kickstarter done. And we've been kind of doing that. We had to go through and figure who gets what, you know, and then you've got to come to the end. And when you get to the place where you finished, you kind of go, is that it? Mm-hmm. Is that all of them? Because it's fun to do. And Kickstarter is a very valuable resource. And clearly you're taking advantage of that resource, too.
Yeah, it doesn't fit with my nature. I'm more of kind of like a internal person first. I just kind of like to do it myself. And then when I'm done, hands clean, show it to the world. But I got convinced to do this, you know, by Frederick, and I kind of couldn't turn it down. You know, we had so many good people on it. It's like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And, you know, it's great that all these people are willing to support it ahead of time and trust that you'll deliver it to them. And you build this great following. And yeah, there's definitely some major positives about it.
Did it surprise you to find all the support out there?
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, I understand that this is a good project and the people on it had done great things in the past. And of course, you'd want to see a book with these people on it. But then you just never know. Like, I mean, you can't take for granted that people are going to show up and just, especially in advance, you know, several months in advance. And just, so, I mean, every time I got one of those emails, and that's a funny thing about Kickstarter, you get a little email every time someone backs. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, if you're making 1,300 backers, you're getting several of these a day. So I was always just amazed. It was like 30 straight days of being like, wow, can't believe 400 people, 600 people, 800 people. I'm like, wow. Yeah. So that was kind of a good feeling, even though I was sweating a little bit whether we'd make the huge goal. I was always just amazed the support that we got.
Because, you know, I it's funny to say this, but I kind of think the Kickstarter may be the way the future is going to go for comics.
There's some positives. As somebody who's backed, I mean, I think I've backed 60 projects myself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely, there are some good ones and some bad ones. And I can tell Kickstarter is working hard to make sure more good ones are done than bad ones. But you can just end up backing something and they just don't deliver. Either not at all, or it just isn't really what you expected, or they just took so much longer. So myself, I've just gotten, like, I know more, like, what to look for and how to choose projects that I want to back. I definitely enjoy it. There have been some great projects that I've been like, wow, I'm glad I backed that one.
And there's some stuff that we probably would never hear of except if it wasn't on Kickstarter.
Right, yeah. And that's what's important, to look for the new thing, not just to be like, this star is new enough. I mean, you can if you want, but I mean, not just to do somebody I've heard of. Because they do a video, and a lot of times they have tons of preview artwork, and you can follow along, you know, with the updates. So the opportunity's there to learn about this stuff.
Because comic shops and stuff, I always worry that they're going to go under at some point. When the first trade paperbacks came out, I was terrified that everybody's going to go into the local bookstores, you know, the Barnes & Nobles and stuff like that, and get their comics rather than go to the comic shops, which you have to do like on a weekly basis in order to keep up with everything. But it hasn't worked out that way. And I'm kind of wondering if Kickstarter is the way, if we can go through and peruse something before we actually support it, and then help those people on something of a personal level, and then get the books back. You know, that has a lot of appeal to me.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with trade paperbacks, with digital, with Kickstarter. All that it's doing is connecting creators and readers so that more projects can happen, you know, and that's going to help stores. It's going to just build the total audience and the ease, the accessibility of it all. Mm-hmm. So that's good for everybody, you know, that's doing right by comics anyway.
Well, that's what I think anyway. I agree with you on that one, because let me just say that I think that there are a lot of good stories out there that people just aren't aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And like the stuff you're doing, I think people should be aware of. And I really work hard to find these things. And I think Kickstarter is a way to make these stories available to the public.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have it, you know, I worry sometimes, how many great stories did we miss because Kickstarter wasn't there to make them happen?
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, now we're really lucky.
And there are people in the world that it's still easier for them to get online and peruse Kickstarter than it is to get into a comic shop. It just has to do with where they live or what their setup is.
Right. Now, are there other projects you're working on, or are these guys keeping you pretty busy these days?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Loved and Lost and Broken Frontier are going to keep me busy for the next couple months.
Okay.
The two stories that I wrote for Broken Frontier, I wouldn't mind seeing have a life afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
They're both stories that stand on their own, but also could go into more. But, you know, I haven't really approached that yet till these are done and out. And it'd be nice to get some reaction, too.
Mm-hmm.
People will see what they think and, mm-hmm. you know, I'll get a better idea. Oh, is this something that I can continue on?
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I don't know much about is Broken Frontier. That's where you're working at. Do you want to explain what that is?
Broken Frontier is a comic news website. The guy who runs it is out of Belgium. Well, he's the guy who started it, Frederick.
Mm-hmm.
And then Andy Oliver is the editor-in-chief. He's in London. So it's definitely got an international feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very indie, got an indie feel. Not necessarily like art house indie, but, you know, just more European stuff, more smaller press stuff. And, yeah, I've been writing from them since I got out of art school, just as a sort of a side gig,
mm-hmm.
doing interviews, staff picks, covering some conventions. And I just really like their take on the industry. They don't do, rumors or gossip or the bickerings at all. They don't get into that at all. Pure covering comic events, creators, books coming out. And that's what I like. I don't like to get into the other stuff.
What's the website to go to get that?
BrokenFrontier.com.
Okay, so that's... And not everybody has it exactly the way that the name we expect. So I always like to ask that just in case.
Yeah.
So that keeps you busy. Well, man, you're doing some great stuff. And I really appreciate getting the chance to talk with you. And you'll have to send me some of these when they're all finished so I can write a review up for them.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I write
yeah.
reviews up on the website where I work at, Major Spoilers, too. So we can always talk about these good things because, man, they're fun to read. Big surprises all the way. And, you know, you learn a thing or two, which, boy, I remember it puts me back to my Gardner Fox days when Justice League, when he would teach us the periodic tables and stuff like that in the middle of Justice League. And I like that kind of stuff. So you're doing a great job. And, boy, keep it up. And maybe we'll bump into each other at another convention. I'd really like that.
Sounds good, Wayne. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next week as we continue our countdown to episode 200. But until then, keep reading your comics.